Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRCPC call on the 25th of September, 2012. On the call today, we have Michele Nealon, Mikey O'Connor, James Bledel, Bob Mountain, Kevin Erdman, Hegar DeFaller, and Phil Corwin. We have apologies from Simonetta Bataiga, Alain Béranger, Angie Graves, Barbara Knight, Rui Dykes, Paul Diaz, and Avi Doria. And from staff, we have Marika Kernings, Glenda Saint-Géry, Larry Cobb, and myself, Nancy Pergin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, James.
Thank you, Natalie, and welcome everyone to IRTPC Working Group for 25th of September. Getting very close to the end. Hopefully, everyone has had a chance to review some of the posts to the mailing list where we're hashing out some final language that will constitute our recommendations. But first, sorry, I skipped our preliminaries here. Does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest? Okay, seeing none, has everyone... Oops, I'm sorry, Michele has an update. Go ahead, Michele.
I'd like to declare myself a tree hugger.
All right. Join the club. The water's fine.
I'm reluctant to take the bait on that one, Michele.
Thank you.
Can you quickly bring us tie us to our industry or the work at hand here?
James, considering the number of conference calls I've been on over the last few months since this was introduced, and considering the complete lack of any updates from about anybody with respect to their SOIs, apart from like one person out of I don't know how many hundred, you can consider my comment to be my reflection on the importance and the critical necessity of going through the motions of this on every single call.
Gotcha. Okay, well, message received. We can also call it comedy interlude because I think that was a good one today. So moving on then, hopefully everyone has had a chance to review the draft agenda, which was sent to the mailing list by Marika yesterday and is also posted in the right-hand column of Adobe's chat. Does anyone have any concerns or comments about our agenda, or can we consider it adopted? Okay. Thanks, everyone. So jumping back to where I hastily rushed in, we're getting very near the end. Item number 7 in our agenda is to review the work of the next two meetings. And, I think that of the next two meetings will definitely be will involve some review and just a polish of our final report, including our recommendations. So with that in mind, we can move on to some of the language that was circulated on the list. And I apologize that this went out over the weekend. I had every intention of getting it out late last week, but we all are in the same boat, I think, when it comes to firefighting from one crisis to the next, and I just could not get to it. So let's take a look then at the consensus review for Charter Question A, and this is the recommendation for the change of registrant policy, and whether or not this would be a combined policy, as in this is just part of the IRCP, or whether this would be a separate policy, its own standalone policy, or whether that there's some hybrid approach. And the hybrid approach, I think, would be that we take the existing IRCP. We don't throw it out completely, but we create a second part to it. We call it the change of registrant part. We add to the inter-registrar existing language, and then we rename the IRTP to be what something else like transfers. I think that's the approach that it seems we were coming down towards in our last discussion, because while there are trade-offs, creating a separate policy, you might lose a number of definitions and procedures, but creating a standalone or creating a fully combined policy presents challenges as well. So that was kind of the thinking behind developing this hybrid approach. So I've got a cue here of Michele, but I just wanted to, before that, can we have Marika quickly read through the proposed language, Michele, and then we'll go to the cue.
Marika?
This is Marika. So just to clarify as well, because basically this would replace the current language that's in the initial report that basically details those three approaches as we had in the initial report. So basically the proposed language reads, the working group discussed as part of its initial report whether a change of registrant policy as outlined above should become part of the existing IRTP or should be established as a separate consensus policy, or a hybrid approach should be followed. The working group would like to express a preference for the creation of a hybrid policy whereby the IRTP would become a transfer policy, whereby one part or section details the policy for a change of registrar and another part or section details the policy for a change of registrant. However, if as part of the implementation process there are strong arguments for why a different approach should be followed, the working group suggests that those arguments are reviewed by the IRTP Part C implementation review team.
Okay, thank you, Marika, and I'll go to the queue. Mikhail, you're up first.
Thanks, James. The trees have an opinion on this. Sorry, I'll stop. I'll behave. No, seriously. I would agree with the idea of the hybrid because I think, you know, trying to break things out into multiple separate policies, while it might be suitable in some contexts, if anything, in this particular context, it would be a really, really, really bad idea. So I'd be supportive of that, and based on the proposed language, I support that 100%, and would like to thank Mikey and the rest of you for doing such a wonderful job here, and also to apologize for my total lack of input over the last couple of weeks since I've been otherwise occupied. Thanks.
Thanks, Mikhail. I'll go ahead and put myself in the queue and say I also agree with this approach. I think it is a cleaner way of... when you say hybrid approach, really we're talking about a cleaner way of combining them so that it makes sense without having things like inter-registrar acting as an umbrella for a change of registrar policy. So I'd also like to say thanks to Mikey and the other folks who helped draft this language. I think it's good. I think that we have sent this out to the list with the comment that silence is agreement, and so far, Marika can correct me, but it's been nothing but silence. And explicit agreement. So I think this is probably, my co-chair is not here, but I think we're ready to declare that we have consensus on this language. So I will say that we can move on then and look at agenda item number 4, which is similar to reviewing final language for our Charter Question A recommendation. And we'll just wait for the Adobe room to catch up to our conversation here. It's coming up now. So this is the guts of our recommendation number 1 for Charter Question A. And Marika, maybe can you walk us through the beginning and then the highlighted parts? I think is that because that's new, or that's something that has yet to be discussed?
Yeah, this is Marika. So basically the first part, recommendation 1, I think it's the same language as we looked at before. But when you go into the part that I highlighted in yellow, some of those have changes based on our discussion last week, especially the first part where I think Mikey proposed some new language based on the comments that people made. So that is slightly different from what was reviewed last week. While I believe that the other parts highlighted in yellow are more to mark the fact that those are significant changes from the initial report based on the discussions that we've had, and I think this is mainly language that was suggested by Mikey.
Okay, so can we go read through the first part and then the first bullet? And I see that we've got one hand up now from Bob, but we'll maybe take a cue as we go.
Okay, so this is Marika. So the first bullet, basically under the outlining the proposed change of registrant process for GTLDs, currently reads, both the prior registrant and the new registrant need to authorize the change of registrant. Such authorization could also be provided by the prior registrant in the form of a pre-approval or via a proxy. However, such pre-approvals must be highly secured and constructed in a way that prevents an unauthorized person from requesting the action based exclusively on account credentials that may have been compromised. For example, registrars may want to consider out-of-band authentication based on information that cannot be learned from within the account or publicly available resources such as Whois. The working group recommends an IRTP Part C implementation review team to address questions on this and other recommendations and assist registrars and staff to implement this recommendation in accordance with the intention of the working group. Do you want me to go point by point? Or?
No, thank you. We'll stop there. I think we have a queue, and Bob's first. We'll see what he wants to weigh in on this first bullet point, and then we can move on to the second one, and I went ahead and put myself at the end of the queue because I have a question / comment. So go ahead, Bob.
Okay, yeah, thanks, James and Marika. This is Bob for the recording. I guess I'm a little confused. I thought that last week when we added the section which was referring, or the sentence, referring to the IRTPC implementation team, that meant we were going to lighten up on our sort of recommendations and the specifics around the implementation. So I guess my concern is that we're in the second sentence, however, such a pre-approvals must be highly secured. I think we all agree that's true. But then we go on and we sort of specify some implementation details or approaches, and constructed in a way that prevents unauthorized person from requesting the action based exclusively on account credentials that may have been compromised. So I thought the reason for inserting the implementation team was so that we would not necessarily dictate the approach or the details on implementation, but would yet defer that to a follow-on group that would really focus on the optimal approach. So I guess that's my comment. I'll stop there.
Thanks, Bob. Can I respond with two hats on simultaneously without confusing the transcript? I want to respond as the person who took the language out, and then I want to respond to support what you're saying. The first response is I took that out because I felt like it was weird that the first mention of an implementation review team is coming buried in this bullet point. I thought that was an important concept and belonged somewhere else earlier in the document. So that's probably why I think when Marika sent around some drafts earlier that I teased that one out. But I agree with you. I think that sentence that starts with however is very prescriptive. And in some respects, and I see Mikey's hand up, so maybe he can weigh in as well. I'm concerned, now I'm speaking just as a registrar, I'm concerned that it sort of says, you know, we can stop hijacking if registrars would stop doing things that are insecure. I think that's noble and everyone agrees with that. I think the trick is, you know, how to do that and how to keep it flexible and making sure we don't enshrine that into something, like policy. So one of the things that I was thinking, Bob, is that we replace or look at replacing or condensing that whole section to something along the lines of, however, as a best practice, registrars offering a pre-approval must blah, 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 and say something, you know, very straightforward. When we start saying things like, requesting action based exclusively on account credentials that may have been compromised, I mean, if we said, for example, this was not your registrar account but your credit card account, well, if someone has stolen your entire identity, then they have all of your accounts. And so I feel a little concerned that we're essentially throwing I think we're being overly prescriptive here. We're kind of telling registrars what they can and can't do, and registrars very quickly will find themselves in a situation where the policy restrains them from taking action against or building a secure system. So that's just my thoughts. I see Mikey's hand is up, so I'm going to drop my hand and let Mikey weigh in. Mikey?
Thanks, James. It's Mikey. I just want to replay the bidding on this one. Remember that this is compromised language. The original language would have said both the prior registrant and the new registrant need to authorize the change of registrant. Period. And the compromise is this notion of a pre-approval, which I don't like. I have never made any bones about that. But in the spirit of compromise, I've said, okay, if you want to do a pre-approval, that's fine with me, but we have to erect some pretty big fences around that before I'm going to be comfortable. So I'm not keen at all on the idea of leaving, you know, building a security hole and then reducing the protection to best practices. I think you get a choice. You either take the security hole that we're creating out or you leave the protection in. But building a security hole and then unprotecting it is something I'm going to squawk long and hard about. Sorry to be such a trout.
No, Mikey, I mean, not, that's understood. And I think we're all closer than we think. And because I'm not, I want to preserve the compromise as well. And I think Bob does as well. But I think it's really that second part that's really, I think we're all agreed that we need this has to be a tight process and we have to be respectful of security. I think it's the prescriptive nature of saying what that security looks like is where I struggle with. So one approach, I'll let Bob go here, but I'll put myself in the queue because I think I may have a fix that I think you might like, Mikey, but I don't want to presume. So Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, James, feel free to keep going. I can jump in after you're done.
Okay, well, I didn't want to overstep here. So I think we can possibly even leave that first sentence intact, Mikey. Must be highly secured and constructed in a way that prevents an unauthorized from requesting action based on account credentials. We can say registrar account credentials that may have been compromised. I think that limits it to the things that we can actually control. And I think registrars feel a little more warm and fuzzy about that. And then the next sentence can be where we give an example. I think that we could say, for example, as a best practice, registrars could consider, or we can say as a non-limiting example, or as a demonstration or a demonstrating example. What I just didn't want, Mikey, and I think maybe I'll let the other registrars pipe in as well, is for that example to become a policy requirement or a policy obligation. Does that make sense?
This is Mikey. Let me just, I'm assuming you want to reply.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm fine as long as we don't tinker with the first sentence, the one that starts however. You know, tinkering with the for example sentence to soften it is fine with me. If that's
well, the
what
only
we're
tinkering
working on. What I was hearing was that, and I'm even fine narrowing the account credentials to registrar account credentials, if that helps. But
we might even be able to shoehorn the public Whois stuff back up in here as well, like registrar account credentials or public data such as Whois.
Yeah, that's fine.
Bob,
I am extremely uncomfortable creating security holes and then leaving them unguarded on purpose. That's my concern.
And I think a very valid concern, and I think the registrar concern is that they want to make sure that if they have an obligation, it's something that they actually control. I think having that breakdown with the first sentence is basically unaltered except to state registrar account credentials or public data such as Whois. The for example and everything that follows there just probably needs to be clarified that's where we're helping registrars get there as opposed to saying this is how you have to do it. Because there could be other ways. Registrars could have like a safe deposit box with the key card in or something crazy like that. Actually sounds like something Mark Monitor would do. Go ahead, Bob, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. Yeah, I guess first of all, I'm not quite sure what Mikey means when he refers to himself as a trout, but I'll leave that for later. I think Mikey and I worked on this language together, so I have no problem with the language. I guess my concern was in kind of putting something that was a hard recommendation on the implementation that might limit the implementation team. They might come up with something that's more secure, but not be able to do that because we're sort of restricting their approach. So that was my only concern. I totally agree with Mike, though, that you know the we can't have a security hole, and this you know the whole idea is, and I think we're all in agreement that we want to make sure that any sort of fast track approach is not going to be you know sort of open season for hijacking. So I'm totally on board with Mike. I just want to make sure that the ability of the implementation team is not sort of restricted in one way or the other. So that's my only point.
Okay, thank you, Bob. And I put the fish reference in the chat there, so we'll see if Mikey agrees with me. But he's a Minnesotan, so he probably has a better handle on that. So I think we're getting pretty close to some compromise on the compromise. I think that we want I think we are all violently agreeing with each other in a number of respects. I think registrars are particularly cautious about anything that would tie their hands and their ability to address or design a secure system. And I think, you know, Mikey has some good points here. We can't knowingly create a loophole and then just walk away from it and call our work done. So, Marika, you're up next.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just in relation to the reference to the implementation review team, my idea would be that somewhere in the report, at the appropriate place, we would create like an overarching recommendation, which I think we've also done in some of the other PDP working groups, where we basically say, like, for the implementation of all these recommendations, the working group, you know, recommends the creation of an implementation review team that, you know, will consist of members of this working group and, you know, the standard language. And then the second part could basically refer to that, basically saying the working group recommends that the IRTP implementation review team as referred to before or after, wherever it fits in the document, so that that flows easier and you know, making clear that that group is indeed there to work with staff to implement recommendations in accordance with the intention of the working group.
Okay. Okay, folks, are we done? I think we've poked this bullet point full of holes, and I think we've arrived at something we can all live with. Marika, did you capture that language change that we were discussing about inserting some qualifiers in account credentials and then making sure that the, you know, and I almost leave it to the lawyers on the call that we can say that the examples are not obligations, something that clarifies that.
Yeah, this is Marika. What I had written down was now, and then I think you use that wording, like as a non-limiting example, registrars may want to consider something along those lines.
Okay, that works. And I think we've got enough attorneys on, you know, in the ICANN space that they can tell us if we're walking into a minefield with that language. But, okay. Great. Let's move on. And thanks for, you know, keeping us honest, everybody. You know, we do have some fragile compromises, and we don't want to blow those up, but I think if we can preserve those in such a way that tightens up the language, well, we should take those opportunities as well. Mikey, go ahead.
This is Mikey. Just real quick, the other change to the language is to narrow the first sentence to say exclusively on registrant account credentials or publicly available information, such as who is. That's the other half of this. So
I think Marika just got that.
Yeah.
This is Marika. Just to clarify, was it? I first thought it was registrar, but is it registrar?
I'm sorry, registrar.
Okay. Yeah, I got that.
Okay.
That's right.
Good.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, Marika, can you take us to the second bullet point, please?
Yes, this is Marika. I don't think any changes were made to this part, but it's just to highlight that this is an update from the initial report. So the second bullet point reads, a change of registrant cannot take place simultaneously with a change of registrar, although they can be made to appear that way to registrants in a registrar's user interface. If both changes need to be made, it is advised that the change of registrar IRTP be completed prior to initiating the change of registrant in order to avoid the proposed 60-day inter-registrar transfer lock, see below.
Okay, so I'll take a cue on that, and I'll put myself at the end, which right now is just me. You know, I guess I don't have any, I'll just pipe in here as a registrar, I guess I don't have any real issues with this. my concerns are very nitpicky a little bit here, but we say something about sometimes I think when we're doing this, we tend to think of the retail registrars such as GoDaddy or McKelly's firm Black Knight or some of those other web-based retail registrars, which is fine and probably is an indication of how successful we have defined that category. However, there are other types of registrars that don't have user interfaces and aren't on the web and operate, more like a law firm or another business service that are not necessarily online registrars. I'm worried that the language as it's written is specific to the more common and familiar model of online registrars, but I'm not super upset about that being an assumption, but it is baked into that recommendation. The other thing is that what are we recommending here? We're saying it is advised, but, when this becomes policy, then compliance, ICANN compliance, is going to come after my folks and businesses like us, and, I don't want to have long and drawn-out arguments or discussions about what the word advised means. So I guess what I'm saying is, if we are recommending this, or if we are requiring this, or if we are saying as an option or an example, I'm not trying to mess up a compromise here. I'm saying that we need some clarity. I think it's ambiguous, and I think registrars may say, I think advised means you tell me what you think you want to happen, then I go do what I want, and ICANN compliance may think, no, when it says advised, this is exactly how you have to do it. And I think that the intention of the working group needs to be captured in that verb. So I'll drop my hand now and let everybody throw rocks at me. Mikey, you're up next.
I just stuck my hand up to respond. So let me throw out some ideas on how to fix that. I think both of those points are good ones. My suggestion on the first point would be to end the sentence at the word registrants and strike the in a registrar's user interface. That way, if you don't have a user interface, you can still make it look the same to registrants. To replay the bidding on this, this arose from a discussion where the point was being made, we want to make this easier for registrants, not harder. And we got into a discussion about the ability to do both things at the same time. And this is me being a geek saying, no, you can't technically do both things at the same time, but you can make it look that way to your customer if you want. So this isn't really policy. This is really kind of addressing, except for the first part that says these things can't happen at the exact same time. So I'd be fine just saying a change of registrant cannot take place simultaneously with a change of registrar, although they can be made to appear that way to registrants, period, to avoid the issue that you're raising there, James. And then in terms of the advised word, I'd be fine backing that down to a word that doesn't trigger the policy flag. We could say it's suggested or it's a good idea.
Recommended.
Yeah, recommended, anything. Because I don't think, I actually would not want to see this sequence get into policy. I think that is a problem. And so that's just bad word choice when I wrote the sentence. So backing it down to recommended or even any other word that fits in there is fine.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. I think those are excellent and friendly and improving edits. McKelly is up next. Go ahead, McKelly. Please don't talk about trees.
I'll try not to talk about trees. Can I talk about paper or... No, okay.
The subject is trout today, not trees.
Okay. I would be very, very cautious as well about anything which is overly prescriptive, because assuming that all registrars operate using the same methodology is downright stupid. assuming that, I mean, what we should be looking at more is achieving a goal as opposed to designating how that goal is achieved. So, I mean, the kind of thing that should be covered is that, you know, the registrar will have retained proof of X, Y, and Z, of, you know, having got the permission or having got whatever it is, as opposed to saying, you know, registrar must do this, even if registrar never doesn't even use a website. So I think that's important. Of course, I have no confidence in ICANN compliance at the moment, so anything which involves compliance kind of leaves me wondering.
Understood. Thanks. Marika, you're up.
Yeah, doesn't work out. I can maybe make a suggestion on the last sentence, because I think maybe changing advice to recommended, from my perspective, it makes it stronger, because all of these things are recommendations, which, you know, are consensus policy recommendations. I'm wondering if just adding it at the end of the sentence, either, you know, changing the advice to maybe suggested, but then basically adding at the end of the sentence saying, but this is not a requirement, to really make clear that that's not a requirement, it's just a suggestion.
I'm okay with that. You're saying that the word recommended is actually going in the wrong direction.
But maybe, you know, I said it's maybe from my perspective as a non-native English speaker, for me, recommending really means, because all of the other things are also recommendations to, you know, the Genius Accounts and the ICANN board, which are recommendations for consensus policy. So in that sense, maybe recommendation is here, but can be misconstrued as meaning recommended as a requirement.
I see that. So instead of recommendations to council for policy, we would say, like, recommendation is recommended for registrars. But I agree with you, and then it starts to get very tortured. So let's say suggested, I think, was one of the words Bob used. I think that it doesn't have a whole lot of lower term. Yeah, and Mikey is plus-wanting that one in the chat as well. Is everyone okay with suggested? And again, the thing we're trying to get away from here is creating something where ICANN thinks they've got ironclad, and I'm not picking on our policy friends, I'm thinking of compliance here, where they think they've got some ironclad language and the registrar disagrees because it's ambiguous. So I see some folks putting check marks in, so I think we'll go with suggested there, Rika.
Yeah, and as I said, maybe then adding at the end of the sentence just really to make it crystal clear and just saying, but this is not a requirement. So it's really clear that, you know, this is just a suggestion and not a requirement.
Or we could say it is suggested, comma, but not required, comma, that's a change of registrar. I think it fits better right there.
Okay.
Okay. And you could have fooled me that you're not a native English speaker. You speak it better than
you.
I do. Okay. Especially you write it better than I do. So can we then move on to the next bullet point? And I'm sorry, is the top of page 2 part of that last bullet, or is that a new section? I don't know if that's a formatting change or...
This is Marika. So basically it's not, you know, there were 3 bullet points that outline, you know, the main requirements, and then the page 2 still belongs to that same section, but it talks more, it's more a general discussion.
Okay.
And again, it's not a...
Okay, so I don't see any changes or highlights in that final bullet. So we're saying essentially that the working group noted that any such process should not create an unfair advantage or disadvantage for any of the segments active in the domain name industry, and noted that it should neither prevent innovation or differentiation amongst registrars. Could we say neither prevent innovation and differentiation? I'm having a little bit of trouble with just the styling of that word here. I would just say should not prevent innovation and differentiation amongst registrars. I think when you say neither, then you're expecting a nor instead of an and, so should not prevent. And then the next paragraph has some changes, so Marika, can you walk us through that?
Yeah, it isn't, Marika. So basically the next paragraph, I think, is just basically summing up the conclusions from, you know, the previous bullet points, and I'll read it out, but just to note that, you know, we'll need to make a couple of changes based on the changes we've agreed upon in the bullet points. So the working group also discussed extensively whether there should be any restrictions in place that would prevent a change of registrar immediately following a change of registrant, between brackets, see the initial report, and recommends that a domain name cannot be transferred to another registrar for 60 days to protect registrants against possible harms arising from domain name hijacking. However, the option to opt out of this restriction with standard notice to all registrants of the associated risks is provided in order to meet the needs of registrants who are concerned about the negative effect on movability of domain name registrations. If a registrar chooses to offer an option for registrants to opt out, the process to remove this restriction must be highly secured and constructed in a way that prevents an unauthorized person from requesting the action based exclusively on account credentials that may have been compromised. So I'm assuming that especially this last part would just be updated to reflect the new language we agreed upon in the first bullet point.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And I see Bob wants to jump in on this. So there goes the hand. Were you, Bob, just pointing out that we mirrored some of that language that we changed above?
Yeah, exactly. Marika, with her final comment, addressed my issue.
Okay. And, Mikey, any concerns about changing this to match what we agreed on in the first bullet point?
This is Mikey. No, that's fine. I was going to say the same thing.
Okay. Excellent. All right. I think we're good there, Marika. As long as we line them up, I think everybody's good with that. Moving on.
So that's fine. So then looking at the steps, I think everything here is the same apart from the highlighted part in step zero, basically that highlights that the inter-registrar transfer policy is revised so as not to permit changes to registrant information at the same time as an inter-registrar transfer, and the gaining registrar must validate this prior to completing the transfer. So it's basically just to reflect what, that the two changes kind of take place simultaneously, and that that is something that needs to be spelled out in the inter-registrar transfer policy.
Okay, so let me think. Let's walk this through very carefully here, if I could. I know we've discussed these pretty extensively, and I don't want to blow up any fragile agreements here, but I think we just need to tread very carefully. The inter-registrar transfer policy is revised so as not to permit changes to registrar information at the same time as registrar transfer. Being registered validation prior to completing the transfer. Mikey, you're putting something pretty extensive in the chat. Is that the note that supports the step?
This is Mikey, yes. We had a pretty long discussion about what this is getting at is this little note that I pasted into the chat, and it's in the draft that I circulated, but it didn't make it into this particular, it's a couple of paragraphs further down in the document, so I just stuffed it into the chat. Remember that, to replay the bidding on this one, if we have a thick registry, it's fairly straightforward for a registrar to validate whether the registrant is changing or not, because they can go look in the thick registry. But in the case of a thin registry, that's not possible. And so we had a pretty long discussion about that and basically came to the conclusion that implementing the validation part of all this, which is the highlighted part that's on your screen, has to wait until some mechanism to do that is in place. And then I, recorded various choices as to how that might happen. So I think that it may be important to sort of draw that note closer to this highlighted stuff or something. But, the notes are fairly important. A fairly important addition to this series of steps. And if we don't clump them together, we wind up, when you just read that highlighted part by itself, it raises all those issues over again. So that's why I pasted that in there.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. And I tend to agree. I had a few thoughts here. The first one is maybe we can reference that note or even move it to a footnote or an endnote or something like that, but I agree, get it closer to this language. The second point I wanted to put out was just a thought here about thick registries, in that you're correct that they do retain that contact data, but they don't retain a history. So if a registrar goes and checks who is on a thick registry on a particular domain name, they don't know if that's the contact information changed, if that's the original data or if that's, only a couple of milliseconds old. I think that's maybe a challenge as well. So I think that we could go forward with it. I'm concerned that we might be putting a lot onto the lap of the implementation review team, which I pity those poor fools, but let's be honest, it's probably going to be some of the folks that are on this call right now that are on that team. So, I think anything we can do to make their job a little bit easier would probably be beneficial. I'm going to drop my hand now and go to Marika and then Mikey. Marika.
That isn't Marika. The notes will follow this section immediately, but it was just broken down to facilitate the discussions here. But an idea would be then to basically number the different notes and then, indeed, after this point, you say, see also notes, whatever the number is going to be, so that the link is clear between those two points.
Thank you, Marika. Mikey, you're up.
Oh, I like Marika's idea a lot. I think that the key thing, the key concept that needs to get retained in this is this notion that there has to be a mechanism, that there has to be validation that the registrant is or is not changing. That's the key. And then, we are going to have to punt a lot of this to the implementation team, partly because the clock is ticking on other efforts. I mean, there's the one that Volker described, which is the business with Uniform Who Is that's going on in the RAA discussions, but there's also then the
thick PDP.
Yeah, the thick Who Is PDP, which is also just coming out of a drafting team right now. And so I think that a lot of the details probably have to wait. But the key policy point is this notion that the validation has to take place so that the registrar says, oops, you're changing registrant. Wait a minute, we have to do that process too. Because remember, the crux of all this is doing them both at the same time. And that's what we're trying to prevent. So we may need to work this language a bit to get that squared away. And that's why I posted that note in there, is that there may be some language in there that clarifies that.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. And I think Marika's idea of numbering those and getting those referenced here, is like we could say C note one or whatever, it is important. Okay. Well, it doesn't look like there were any further changes to that language. So we have about 15 minutes left in our call. Is everyone okay with that one? We can move on to agenda item number 5, which is the notes. And this is something that Mikey was referencing earlier, which was, we've got all these little sidebar notes. And I think the first question that I would put out to the group is, everybody okay with this format of having notes at the end of this discussion? I guess the trade-off being that it keeps all the notes in one place and we can reference them, but on the other hand, if they're baked into the language of the recommendations and the documents a little bit better, maybe it clears up some confusion that folks might have while they're reading the document. So any strong feelings one way or the other? Mike, go ahead.
Sorry to be so dominant on this call, but this is all stuff that I wrote, so I can shed some light on this. These notes immediately follow the stuff that we just looked at. It's not like they're at the end of the report. And the reason I broke them out like that was mostly because in the previous document, we were laying out a little process in a series of steps, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the notes came out of the conversation that arrived at those steps, and it seemed easier to pull them out of the thing, because otherwise you have a step, and then you have a bunch of notes, and then you have another step, and it seemed hard to read. So in terms of formatting, there's no editorial pride there at all. If there's a better way to do this, that preserves it, that's fine. We may find that some of these notes are not needed anymore. This was during the pretty extensive compromise discussion to figure all this stuff out, and it may be that some of these are irrelevant. So anyway, lots of editing room. That's the main message here.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. I think that the notes are fine. My concern is just the readability. So maybe if we just keep them, if we just ensure that they are as close as possible to the language that they are affecting, that's what I was getting at, and that will alleviate the concern. Marika, can you?
Yeah, it is, Marika. I'm hoping that after this call, when we have, hopefully, sign off on most of these changes to actually integrate this all into the draft final report, so people have a complete report to review with all the language, and then people can also make recommendations, indeed, if they feel that there's a need to reorganize some of this stuff. But as Mike has said, I think the notes immediately follow the different steps, and it's all written in such a way that they're all together part of the recommendation as one big chunk as such. So, and the idea would be as well to take it like that when, going to the council or when it gets into, board papers and things, that's all seen as intrinsic part of the same recommendation.
Okay, thanks for clarifying, Marika. Okay, so with that said, let's get through these notes here. The first one here is that note, change of registrant is defined as a material change. I think we've got a plural and a singular there, either material changes or a material change, to any of the following primary contact methods. Hang on one second here, folks, because I think that we have another one here. Okay, so name, I think we need to say registrant name, because I don't think we mean technical or admin contacts. Is that correct? So we would say registrant name, organization, and primary contact method. Can we change the ordering to that? Does anybody have any concerns about that? Okay, I see agreement. Hopefully that's a simple fix, Marika. So in the case of minor updates or corrections, the registrar's discretion may waive this requirement. I think what we can say, we can actually make this a little bit clearer and say something like the distinction between material change or what constitutes a material change versus a minor update or correction is left at the discretion of the registrar. I think we can say something like that. Mikey, you have a question?
I was just wondering if we could replay the bidding on that particular one, because remember, if you say any change, that's fairly easy for computers to understand. Oh, his name is different. It's not a string match, so therefore I know what to do. If you throw, is this the fuzzy logic thing? Because if it is,
yeah.
I'm a little edgy about that.
Mikey, if I could weigh in, I sent kind of an internal process that we use internally where we do tend to be a little what we're trying to get at here is that there's certainly a number of reasons why this could change and it wouldn't be a material change. Changing James to Jim or vice versa, or if someone were to get married or divorced and change their last name, or if an organization went from Inc. to LLC. And we're essentially saying that the registrar can use its judgment in determining what is a material change and what isn't. Now, I agree that we're editing off the cuff here and that the language may not be clean, but I think that it's really important that we leave that somewhat open to the interpretation of the registrar, because they're going to know their market and what is a material change and what's just an update or a correction. Can we go to Marika first, and then Mikey after that? Go ahead, Marika.
This is Rick. I think this was also in response to one of the comments that was made, I think, during the workshop we had, where someone said, well, what if someone, you know, changes their registrant details and then realizes that they've made a spelling mistake? How can we make sure that there's a mechanism in place that, you know, the registrar can make corrections that don't automatically trigger going through the whole process again? So I think that was one of the other elements that were went into, you know, allowing some discretion on distinguishing between material change and a minor update or correction.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Mikey, go ahead.
This is Mikey. Just remember to ask the question, well, what's the harm of making somebody go through this process? Basically, the only thing that happens to them is their domain locks up for 60 days. So I'm remembering back to the domain tasting experience, where the reason why we had domain tasting is because we put a process in place that gave people a way to fix mistakes for a week. And, of course, a whole industry evolved out of that. So it's certainly not a showstopper for me. And I certainly wouldn't blow up consensus on the report over this one, but at the same time, it does seem to me that we are putting a gigantic security loophole into a process that we are trying to use to make things more secure for registrants. And I don't see any great harm arising if somebody changes from James to Jim, or they change their corporation name, or they get married. The terrible thing that happens to them is they can't transfer to a new registrar for 60 days, and there's a way for them to waive that if they want. But to do it the other way, the way we're proposing now, if I can figure out a registrar's fuzzy logic, I can game the registrar's system and steal domain names. That makes me nervous.
If I could jump in there real quickly, another scenario on this, Mikey, would be that someone has decided to change their domain, their registrar. They're fed up with their registrar and they want to transfer. But in the process of requesting the auth info code, they notice that their email address is out of date. It's from a previous employer. They don't work there anymore. They can't get that email. So the first thing that they want to do is change the email address so they can get the auth info code. But wait, now they've locked their domain name. So I think there are other scenarios that we need to make sure that registrars have the ability to, you know, exercise some judgment here based on the situation and based on what they're able to document as far as the registrant's identity.
Hey, Bob, if you don't mind, I'd like to respond directly to that one. That's exactly the use case that I'm trying to prevent, because that's exactly the use case. Oh, my email address has changed. It's now mikey@pirates.bay, and then I've got the domain. So the worst thing that happens is I'm fed up with my current registrar. I change my email address, and then I wait 60 days to leave that registrar or something. But I hate the idea of leaving giant gaps in what is otherwise a very crisp policy that says if any of these things change, you got to go through this process, and you either wait 60 days or you get approval to waive it. End of story.
I'll go to Bob. I think we're getting further apart on this one here. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to help. I guess this is Bob. The you know, the thing I'm thinking is, and something I did myself was you know, changing middle, adding middle initial, you know, which is a relatively small change, and I just did it just to differentiate myself from my cousin, who's got the same name and the same birthday. So, are there, you know, discrete, you know, examples of a use case where, Mikey, you would not object to, where, you know, were we to define those sufficiently where, you know, they wouldn't be part of the security gap, but instead would be, you know, minor enough where they would kind of flip, get below the bar, so to speak.
You know, the trouble with that for me is that then we really are getting into implementing this thing for registrars and saying, well, these are the kinds of changes that are okay and these are the kinds that are not. And I can't imagine that we would be able to come up with all those cases. So I'm pretty stout on this one that, and as I say, it's not a showstopper for me, but I will then write the blog post that says, well, we did pretty good, but we left a gaping hole. And for anybody who's concerned about SSR, there's the hole. Because all you have to do is figure out how the registrar is doing that fuzzy logic and drive a bus through it.
So I put myself in the queue here, and then I'll go to Chris. I'm going to weigh in now from the perspective of a registrar that is notorious for, being zealous about locking domain names against possible hijacks. Let's just leave it at that. I also represent a registrar that has had a couple of incidents where, there have been a number of folks that have decided that because of something that we've done publicly or because of objections to some of our commercials or whatever, that there have been this, hey, everybody, let's transfer our domain names. And I can tell you that this is sort of a showstopper for me, Mikey. As someone who is very concerned about security, domain name security, and as a registrar that has a team, 24/7 team, to handle these types of issues. The concern here is that we have to have the discretion to be able to make those kinds of judgment calls, because when someone is angry at you, angry enough to leave your business, and they can't do it, they've triggered a lot. Remember, we're not all, our customers, the vast majority of them, are not familiar with these processes. So what they see is, GoDaddy won't give me the auth info codes to transfer. They are holding my name hostage. And this is the blog posts and the tweets and the Facebooks, and this is the message that gets out. When, in fact, the counter is, hey, we're just following ICANN policy, or hey, we think we might, you might be a hijacker, or hey, we're concerned that that our systems have, misidentified your contact information or whatever. I mean, that stuff is just lost in this, loud thing. And I think we're all veterans of this industry. We've all probably seen those types of incidents where. So I'm not concerned necessarily. I think Bob maybe has some concerns about name portability from an aftermarket perspective, and I think that's also deserves some consideration. But really, my concern here is that if we go around locking every name that falls into this without the ability for the registrar or the registrant to remove it, and take it back to IRTBB, that is a real problem, and I don't think that's going to go over well either, Mikey. I appreciate the security concern, but now we're talking about like the TSA, where because of a few bad apples, and now everybody's got to take their shoes off. And I think that it can backfire. We can overshoot in our when we're aiming for security. So I'll just put my hand out here and go to Chris, and then Mikey, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, hi there. I must admit I do tend to agree with Mikey and think, this the worst case of the 60 days, even though actually today I've got a case from, we're doing web, or have done a web design of a school, and they're hosting with us, and the domain is registered it's in our account, it's through one of the registrars, and they want to move away from us, which we don't particularly like, but we authorized, we unlocked the domain, did the authorization code on behalf of the client, gone to the admin contact, and of course now the client's come back and said, oh, sorry, the admin contact's the headmaster who left the school a little while ago, it's not up to date. So we're going to have to organize for the email and the contacts to be changed. And yes, they're shouting at us and saying it's got to be done quickly, and yeah, it might, they might have to wait 60 days, but so be it. So I'd just like to just sort of throw that one in, even though I've got a specific case at this time. It's a perfectly bona fide case, but we're going to have to change the contact details before the transfer is made. Thanks.
It's Mikey.
Thanks,
you know, I think that if we continue down this track, basically what we've just undone is the whole change of registrant policy. Because I can see no way. I mean, I think that, James, you're too quick to dismiss the fact that everybody will have to cope with this, not just GoDaddy. Every registrant will have to cope with this, and eventually it will just get baked in. Oh, I make a minor change or a major change to any of those three fields, it's not GoDaddy's fault. It's just the way these things are done. That's part of what policy is all about. And my concern in the other direction is that we are gutting the policy essentially for PR purposes, and that doesn't work for me. So, sorry to drag all this out at the very end of the call, but there you go.
We're over our time. Maybe Mikey, you and I can take this offline. I can assure you this is not a PR thing. This is building language for exceptions when the rule is in the millions and the exceptions are in the dozens, and I'm concerned that we're lopsiding this based on some high profile. But anyway, we need to, we're a few minutes over. Okay, well, we got to item three. We're on item number five. We have through item number six. We have two calls remaining. We need to start to get some things prepped so that we can get this into, you know, that we can make the document cut off by Toronto, and that we allow sufficient time for a read-through. So I see I still have a queue here. We're already over the time. Can we just, Marika, you just have something that you need to add?
Yeah, this is Marika, just a proposal on how to indeed conduct that review. My suggestion would be that I update the final report based on the agreement that we reached on, you know, the different issues that were still open, highlighting this specific part where I hope we'll have further discussion on the mailing list then, or you know, some compromise between those that raised the concerns about the current language, and then encourage everyone on those parts that we, you know, are hopefully in agreement on, that people provide any kind of substantive issues prior to the next meeting on Tuesday, so we can still, you know, try to work towards that deadline and having the report ready for Toronto.
Okay, thank you, Marika, and that's what we're driving for here, folks. So let's adjourn for there, and we will pick this up again on the list and through Toronto. It's always harder the closer you get towards the end. I think that's one of the precepts of project management. So thanks, everyone, and see you next week, and see you on the list.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Thank you very much, Tim. You may now stop the recording.